Leon County Commissioner David O'Keefe for District 5. He will be with us in the second hour talking about the latest going on with Blueprint, this intergovernmental agency, and he's got some concerns about that. And then celebrating a marvelous softball team representing Florida State University, Lonnie Alameda and a couple of her star players. They're with us in the first hour, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 75 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Well, my friend, we have the opportunity to hear from Coach Lonnie Alameda today. And with that, she has McKenna Reed and Allie Dubois. In a conversation we had back at the beginning of the year, in fact, back in January, it deserves a replay. And in doing so, here we are on this weekend when third-ranked Florida State University softball going for the big one. You know, there's a good shot. A lot of people are saying this could be another year for Florida State softball taking the whole prize as we enter this, National Softball World Series. Yeah, so they're doing okay, and they've got a pretty stiff schedule up ahead when, the likes of Oklahoma and UCLA, and yeah. It'll be a challenge, but all of the indicators are that these are young women who are focused, on target, ready to play, and have that warrior seminal sort of thing going on. Meanwhile, Coacha, as they refer to Lonnie Alameda, well, she brings to the plate a kind of blend of that same warrior-like spirit, determination, high energy, high performance expectations. But at the same time, she talks a lot, and you'll hear it today, about the family that is Florida State Athletics, particularly this softball team that has been not only beneficial in their on-field play, their competition, but significantly in their own personal lives. This McKenna Reed, a freshman coming to Florida State University all the way from Oregon, Portland, highly recruited. And she'll tell you the story. She got here, met the folks over there at Florida State Softball, and she said, this is it. This is where I need to be. Well, what was the it? Turns out it's the manner in which they do business. And Lonnie is emphatic about that. You know, that for a lot of these women, this is the biggest thing that they're ever going to do athletically in their lives. Now, others will go on and will perform professionally. Maybe they'll enter the business of coaching. Not unlikely for a lot of these people. But at the same time, the experience itself is its own reward, right? And you listen to Cat Sandercock, this ace pitcher, and all kinds of accolades have come her way, and she has been drafted to play pro. You know, and she will talk about, again, the family that is Florida State softball. She has, for herself, a rather remarkable history playing in, you know, Little League and all when she was a youngster. Her father, especially supportive of her ambition, built her this sizable building for her to practice in. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what it means to be family, in which the expectations for performance, our hopes for achievement, are couched, they are positioned within a determination to encourage, to support, to seek the good for that person that has set their sights on these goals. Isn't that kind of what family is supposed to be? In my experience professionally as a family therapist for many years, mental health counselor, I can tell you the people that ended up in my office didn't play ball that way, pardon the pun. They did not consider family an opportunity to invest, but rather to be rewarded. You know, parents especially who said, hey, you know, I'm doing my job. You got a place to sleep and I'm feeding you. I'm working hard here. So you do what I say. And if you break the rules, yeah, you're going to pay for it. And of course, you know, the severity of that would vary considerably. But I can tell you this, the manner in which expectations are shared, and it happens in life, right? The manner in which we go about encouraging someone else to perform well, we talk about it all the time now in leadership models. You know, that servant leader, the one who says, hey, I'm not sitting back here at the back of the boat. I'm up there with you, pulling on those oars. It's that mentality that says, yes, it's my responsibility to lead, to provide, to protect, but I do so by investing in you and recognizing that you're going to have to learn just as I've had to learn. Life doesn't play fair, necessarily. In fact, I think we're promised that in this world we will have tribulation. Isn't that what he said? In other words, you live in a troubled world, and you can expect tribulation to be at your doorstep on most occasions. But then he went on further to say, but be of good cheer. Hey, cheer up. Don't let that get you down. Because he said, I've overcome the world. What does that mean? It means that we have a resource, and it means that when you find somebody like Kocha who gets it, who decides, I'm going to take what I know about myself, about how much I have been loved and cared for, I'm going to pass that along. And it's not paying it forward, it's reinvesting. You know, it's the affirmation of who we are above and beyond what we do. Right? Right. So I'll remind you when Martin Luther King said, I have a dream. You know, he wasn't the analyst up there giving us all of his detailed report. No, he said, I have a dream. And he invited us to dream with him. My friend, I would say to you, what is your dream? What are you dreaming about? What are you dreaming for? Are you sharing that dream in the lives of those who rely on you, who are connected to you? I think Lonnie's doing that. I think her whole crew is doing that. And what's remarkable, too, the players, and you'll hear it with Ali Dubois, McKenna Reed, they're going to be with us here in this first hour. They're doing it for each other. They've all begun to learn how to share in that dream. That's really more than wins and losses. It's more than success or failure. It's about endurance. It's about believing for the end game. That's what we're doing today. Stay with me. FSU softball has, for its history, been a remarkably well-organized, disciplined program, well-managed, well-coached. Our good friend, Coach Lonnie Alameda, has been at the helm, and she is our guest today. Hello, my friend.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
It is a pleasure, and she comes with royalty in tow. Yeah. It's true. They're like, they are the queens of the diamond, and we have both of them are pitchers, right? Isn't that right? So McKenna Reed, who mm-hmm. hails from Portland, Oregon. How are you, McKenna?
I'm good. How are you?
Yes, majoring in biology. This is a young lady who, as a freshman, has already gotten everybody's attention. We'll not embarrass her too much here, but there's a formidable array of achievements to her name as a player in high school, right? Back there in Oregon.
Correct.
We also have this other rather gifted player, Ali Dubois, who is a pitcher, a redshirt senior, graduate student in sports management, right? Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Hi. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, we have been working these two ladies along with the rest of the team for the last, what is it, 3 or 4 days you mm-hmm. guys were doing this?
Yep.
As a kind of a training exercise, team building sort of
yeah.
thing.
Connection.
Digging foxholes.
Yeah. It's a company called The Program.
Ah.
And they're Marines and Navy SEALs, and they come in, they share a little bit of what it's like to be the ultimate teammate.
Wow.
When you're in battle and you're backed against the wall and it's life or death, ultimate teammate. But where trust flourishes and teammate ability and commands and how you lead and how you follow and just some really cool things. So yeah, we dug into
you notice
a little
they
bit.
Both winced when
they
used
did,
the word
yes.
dug. Yeah. Their eyes just narrowed
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah.
Not funny, Coach.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be funny for a little bit, but yeah.
Right.
But a little more of the task and communication side of it. So
yeah.
we're lucky enough to have a great relationship with two of the program members, and so we can really identify some areas that we want to
wow.
key into with the players, and they are super close to with us too, so they're very real. And I think it was a pretty awesome experience. Ali has done this before, but this is first time for McKenna being a freshman, and you know, I think we all walked away with a little something, even as coaches and staff members walked away with a little something that could make us
yeah,
better.
Yeah, and so I take it this happens each year. You mm-hmm. guys have been doing this for a while.
Yeah, we always do it in the fall. So this is the first time we've done it in the, well, I wouldn't say spring right yet, I guess winter, but
kind
we
of.
Only got a couple days of practice under our belt, like three, right?
Yeah.
3 days of practice.
Yeah.
And then we
yeah.
were in vans and let's see
Off
what we're
we
like.
Go.
Yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And your season starts here in a couple of weeks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First game?
It's February.
Mm-hmm. February. What's the date?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember offhand?
Mm-hmm. Ninth, I believe.
Yeah.
Mm hmm.
Are we
yeah.
ready for that? Are you ready for this? You ready to hit the field?
I'm ready to just experience like a first season. It'll be challenging for sure, but I think like especially the fall, it's like something to look forward to for sure.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, you're really never off, right? You're always mentally, physically, emotionally plugged into softball. That's how it works, right? At a collegiate level, anyway. So Allie's over here going, yeah, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she's really awesome at giving us time for helping our bodies recover over the winter. She gives us a lot of time, which is something that I've never done in my life, had time off from softball. So it was something that just, like, was really amazing to actually, like, buy in and take the time off. Obviously, like, when you grow up not taking time off, you don't want to ever take the time off.
Yeah.
Then once you do, like, it really, really, really helps.
Interesting. Mentioned some of your achievements here. 3 times NFCA All-Region First Team, 2018 Patriot League Rookie of the Year, 2-time Mildred Barnes Award, that was in 20 and 21, 2 times Patriot League Academic Honor Roll. So, you're telling me this is not your first rodeo.
Not the first. The first here, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome, too, by the way. So, with that in mind, and both of you have come from other parts of the country, you from Connecticut and you from Oregon, those connections came about because you were invited, or talk to me about how you chose to make FSU your home.
Mine was entering the transfer portal after I finished my 4 years at BU. I got my degree from there. And so I decided to enter the transfer portal with my last year of eligibility. And so mine was kind of a crazy experience just because I entered the portal really late. I couldn't make up my mind between staying or leaving or what I wanted really for myself. And then ultimately I made the decision to enter the portal kind of late in August. So I had to sit out a year. It was just like kind of the timing wise. So I thought that I was going to sit out a year at home and take a year to make a decision. And then when I came and visited at Florida State, I just knew that it was where I wanted to be. And so I decided to pack up my bags within a couple of days and just go down there for two years instead of one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to ask you then. So you knew pretty quickly, this is where I need to be.
Yeah.
How did that come about? What was it, our brilliant landscape? Was the mountain range? I mean, because we don't have any of that stuff, right?
No, but we have an amazing softball program, amazing people. And I think that coming from a school where I spent 4 years, I had very specific things that I knew that I wanted for myself and for a program that I wanted to be in.
Right.
And I didn't ever think that I would actually find a school that had all those things that I wanted, a program that had all those things that I wanted.
So that was the fit. Yeah.
And the warmth was just kind of like a bonus. And never in my life did I ever think that I would end up here, because I honestly had zero expectations or anything entering the portal. I had nothing. I didn't know anything. And
yeah.
I just
yeah.
decided to finally do it and didn't know where I would end up. But
wow.
Didn't ever think that I would find a place that had everything that I wanted.
Wow. McKenna, similar experience there for you? Or how was yours the same? Or
definitely not the transfer portal. Yeah. As a junior, I committed to NC State pretty early. I was
junior in high school.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was committed there for almost a year. And then I decommitted just for reasons personally with my family, and then I decided to adventure out and look for new programs.
Interesting.
I actually messaged Troy Cameron. Or was it
Travis?
It was actually Travis Wilson. Yeah. And we connected on Twitter, and then pretty much just took off from there. I came down for a visit, saw the program, went to a camp, and it was the best easy decision that I could have made.
Really? So it's that first-hand experience, and it's your natural warmth, Lonnie. Hmm. This is what you bring to the game. It's, you know, this whole thing about you being a real hard person to deal with. I don't believe any of
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think you're a big softie.
I am a softie. I'm a pushover for sure. Yeah. I would put it back in their corner, though. I think both of them knew exactly what they wanted. So I think it's great when you have players or prospective student athletes that know what they want, then it's really easy. You don't have to, you know, roll out the red carpet. Like they're looking for something. Yeah. I think even though there are different times in their lives, you know, I think it's pretty cool because they're willing to do the hard stuff. Mm. It's not always easy and not always given to you. You have to do the hard stuff and personal growth along with sport growth. And so both of them have been amazing at it. And Allie's got experience, but she's leveling up. So it's like a different experience when you're coming from something that when you're reading off her accolades, that's really comfortable to stay there. But then challenging yourself to see like, meet new people, get a new conference. That's really hard to do personally at times. And so just really proud of her for doing that. And McKenna coming all the way across country. She does have family down Tampa, so that's a little bit of a help. But, you know, again, just getting outside the comfort zone. They both have not had comfortable paths. And so, but they're willing to put it out there. And one, as a pitcher, outstanding, because you're the only one with the ball every single time. So you have to have moxie to be able to do that. And they both have that. But two, it's what they want. And so, so yes. And I am a pushover. So that is true, but yes.
McKenna Reed, Allie Dubois, and Coach Lonnie Alameda. They are our guests, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. I'll be right back.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
We're back. We're talking about FSU softball. Coach Lonnie Alameda. We just don't have enough time, Lonnie, to read off all of your achievements. I'm sorry. We'll just say you're the best softball coach ever in human history. How about that? Yes. And these two young ladies over here are like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. And you said this a moment ago that they have moxie. Mm. What is it? What is that?
Yeah. Well, I first say I'm not the best coach, but I am the luckiest coach. I'm very lucky to have traveled around the world, been around amazing people. We had an alumni come back this weekend and was around us with the program. And it's just cool to hear their stories and how it impacts them later in life. These two, 10, 15 years from now, will be able to take these moments. So like just being in that transformational time, so cool. So cool as a person. So luckiest. Yeah, moxie. Everybody that watches sports, there'll be a moment where the game's on the line, whether it's a kicker getting ready to kick the extra point, it's the quarterback to make a moment, it's a baseball pitcher, it's a baseball hitter,
about tennis.
golf, tennis, right? Like there's just a moment.
Nosebleed opportunities, yep. Man.
And so like
pressure.
Pitching wise, if there's 120 pitches in a game for your team, yeah. The pitcher's always going to be a part of it. The right fielder may not be. The second base may not, you know, like, so the percentage. So the courage to be in those moments is pretty huge. And like Allie was alluding to, she's been pitching since as long as she knows. McKenna does this too. Like, you just pitch and you pitch and you pitch and you pitch. But, like, there'll be a moment where, like, this pitch is weighted way more than another pitch.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the guts enough to be like, man, I've done this and I can do this and me versus you and whatever happens, I'm okay with. So I think when you have the moxie to go out there and your whole team's like, heck yeah, Dubois got the ball or McKenna's got the ball, go get them. And they feel that, you bring that to the team and it's just an extra edge.
Yeah.
And so anyone that met these two, I mean, they're as sweet as this can be, right? Like I always get on Allie, like super sweet, very sweet. But you want to be this like fierce warrior in the circle. So you want to pick up the warrior cap and go out there and be it. And we've seen it in McKenna a little bit at times, but like moxie comes in all forms. And, I think part of it is just part of what you have to do in the circle. And so, yeah, I'd be curious how you two describe moxie.
Yeah. Let's go there. When she says moxie, and I have a question that is allied with that. When you are putting on that cap, that warrior self, how that happens for you, and is it the night before? Is it the week of? Is it at that moment? I mean, you get yourself locked in to that mentality. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the guts and confidence and belief in throwing the ball, like when you're out there, because I've never had all the confidence in the world. I've never been the most confident person, confident in anything, in pitching, in life, really. But like when I'm out on the mound, I don't want to give the ball up, and I don't want anyone else to have the ball. I want the ball, and I want to throw, and I want all of that, even when I'm not confident. But then when I have the ball in my hand, like I know that I can do it. And coming from a smaller school, playing bigger teams, the hitters always seemed like they weren't human. They weren't, they were just on a whole nother level, that they weren't like a person to me. And then coming here, you just kind of realize that everyone is a person. They're just like me. But seeing them in the box and still just throwing the ball is kind of like moxie to me, even though I might not be the most confident person in the world. And I know that when they step in the box, all I think is that they're so much better than me, but I'm still going to attack them with the ball anyways. So I feel like that's kind of what it is.
So you're overcoming within your own thinking to be able to deliver on a promise. It sounds like you've made a promise to yourself.
And your team.
And your team.
Yeah.
And maybe it's obvious, the training comes in, right? Because you've spent thousands of hours working that over until, right, you're in that moment. McKenna, you step up and go, is it the similar sort of thing? Nobody's taking this ball from me. Is that how it feels?
I think for me, I just, like, train as much as and as hard as I can, like, weeks, and I build myself up, like, knowing that I have a game this certain week. And it definitely, like, when a big strikeout or something like that happens, like, my teammates will just fire me up, especially by my reaction. That kind of just fuels the next inning. And I always, like, look forward to after the game and how I'm going to feel, like, just push in this moment. Because after this game is over, there's nothing else I can do. So just really giving it, like, you're all, like, either it's cheering or pitching in the bullpen. It's all going to come together for that team win.
A lot of self-talk goes into that, right? You're on the mound and you're having that conversation with yourself. I've also noticed that your infield will come together and they do what looks like a little dance or a prayer or something. If it's just, hey, we got this. What do they do? What do they say to each other?
They always bring those out. Could be a dance, could be a prayer, could be a punch in the arm, could be a, so again, like you're a family on the field, whatever they need, whatever Allie needs. You know, like they'll know Allie because we've been a couple years together, right? We're just getting to know McKenna. So we'll find out as we get into these foxhole moments, like what does she need so I can pull her in with me. And so, but it is, it's life on the field. And when Allie alludes to the fact that she, you know, deals with confidence, like we're working on confidence. Like it's a very, you don't just go perform and, you know, like you're actually who you are every day is what you're going to be on the field. And I think that when they start to realize that, then they can let their guard down and be like, oh, we're just humans out here trying to do human things together. Yeah.
You have in common with some of your colleagues, both current and historic, the many times that I talked with Coach Bowden, he would talk about family. He would talk about the players who years out are still writing back to him all the time, telling him about their kid, their kids, the work they're doing, the life lessons they gathered. And Sue Semra, the same story. When I reference what you see with Mike Norvell out there on the field, you've noticed if an if a player's down, where's Norvell?
He's right by him.
Right there. And I said that to Sue, and she said, yeah, we're family. You've used the word family several times here. Is that pervasive? Does that, you think, work its way through the whole athletic, something you inculcate with each other?
It's one of our core values, so it's right in your face
it's
when you
right
see
there.
It.
Yeah,
but it's one thing to like throw it on a wall and throw it on some letterhead and live it. And, you know, I think that we really work hard on defining it and living it. And It can get overused at time. You know, McKenna's probably like, all right, family. You know, family, to eventually, like, later in life, you're like, man, it's a good family. But I would say Tallahassee gives you that feel, too. I know the first day I stepped here 15-plus years ago, you could feel there's a different vibe here, you know, and you can definitely feel a cohesive unit. So, yeah.
There's definitely a close-knit aspect to this town. You feel like that's the case?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, how do you experience it, though? Because you're on campus a lot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're on out.
Well, I was living in Boston for the past 4 years, and that's a city where there's so many people and so much going on and everyone kind of doing their own thing.
Mm.
But then when you come here, everyone pours into Florida State, and I think that you just can feel the whole city pouring in and, like, loving you, and no matter where you go, it seems like there's always someone who's like, yeah, like, Florida State, go Noles. I walked on planes in Connecticut wearing, like, a Florida State something, and I swear every time I walk on a plane, someone from the crowd says, go Noles, when I walk by with Florida State stuff on, and it's just, like, you don't even realize how far out the community reaches, but then, like, especially in Tallahassee, everyone just pours into the Florida State community, and I feel like the Florida State community pours back, and it's just like,
yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's a really big place. Like, it doesn't feel like how Boston felt, where there was all kinds of people doing their own things, and there's Red Sox and Bruins, and there's all this stuff that people like to do, and people coming from outside, and I feel like Tallahassee's just like this, like, small little place that, like, the outside world doesn't really know how great it is.
Well, we're doing our part here to try to let the world know just how great you guys are. FSU softball brings a lot of encouragement, a lot of, I think, affirmation of those core values.
Mm-hmm.
And watching you guys play, win or lose, you're an impressive squad. And, folks, we're pleased to have them with us. Lonnie Alameda and company, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merry Maids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merry Maids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merry Maids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205 or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205.
We're back and we're talking with Coach Lonnie Alameda. I love saying Alameda. Alameda is such a neat word to say. I may say it a lot more.
Yeah,
you've been saying it a lot.
Yeah, I actually don't hear it a lot because my name is Coacha. It's not Coach Alameda because it's too long, so Coacha. The girls call me Coacha.
Coacha.
So, yeah, so I don't hear Alameda too much.
I can't find my shoes.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, boy. Well, McKenna, what do you think? You know, clearly you're connected with a lot of people involved at Florida State Athletics. Does any of that ring a bell with you?
Definitely. When I went back home in Oregon for winter break, when we had our time to go home, everyone was asking me, like, how was your experience so far? How have you been? And I think every program, every sport has their own experience, especially different players, just different personalities in general. Each program's going to do this, do that.
Yeah.
I think definitely core values within a program is a lot different as well. Like, we just install family, ride, gate. It's all different, and it has, like, different meanings.
Interesting. Are all of your friends on the team? I mean, are your closest friends those who play with you? Or are you sort of distributed across various ways in different places around campus? Or I want to get into your personal life here a little bit, okay?
So I have three other roommates, Maddie B, Maddie F, and Avery. We pretty much are like with each other all the time. Like after this, we're going to go get lunch. But we pretty much just stick together like a little unit, and we kind of just take on the campus life together because we live in the dorms. We definitely like just FSU athletics. We kind of just stick together, like every sport. We're always kind of in the realm together of either walking out the gym, seeing each other, friendly highs, whatnot.
Right.
But I think just definitely after this weekend, it makes you realize how close all of us are. Mm-hmm. And for me, sometimes I like just get so comfortable with everyone, and then I kind of take a step back and I'm like, I just like kind of see each other, everyone as like my closest friends instead of my teammates at that point. And then until you get to the field, and it's like we're all doing it for each other.
I get you.
So.
Yeah, so that fits this program philosophy where you really are a squad. You're a team. You're always a team.
Yeah,
it's
mean.
It's like Semper Fi kind of story.
Yeah, right? I don't know if a lot of people know how intense it is to be a high-achieving team. And
when she says
Maddie F., Maddie B., and Avery, those are freshmen on the softball team. So softball is that tight. And sometimes, you know, as a coach, I think you're like, man, like you want them to get out and, you know, enjoy Tallahassee, enjoy Florida State. Like Florida State offers so much other than sports.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a high-achieving athlete and you want to be a high-achieving team, you have to make decisions, you know, on how to do things. And these women have been incredible this year. I mean, the commitment to excellence, to living above the line of our standard, to do all those things, hold each other accountable to it. Not many humans can do it, you know? I mean, it takes a lot, but they also are very passionate about their sport, and this is their major league. This is their time. This is their 4 years. They're not going to get another chance after this to do something super special. And when they can recognize that in each other, then, you know, I mean, we're talking college, you know, a lot of people can check out in college and just do the party scene, and not that they don't enjoy time together and I think have good social life. They do make decisions that are for the team, and that's just really admirable.
It is admirable. Mm-hmm. Was that the way it was for you as a collegiate athlete? Were you in that sort of mindset?
Yeah. So I went to school at the University of Oklahoma a long, long time ago, and I was fortunate to be around some high achieving programs. We were not in the top 25 yet as the softball program, but we had the number one basketball team. I was right there with the Barry Switzer days of football. We were pretty legendary in football at the time. And to see the commitment on the teams that were in the top five and the things that they did and the things that we wanted to do on the softball program was pretty awesome. And I was also able to be a dual athlete, so I played volleyball too. So I'm sad for these ladies that don't get to do that too much, you know, because I was able to cross train and do two different things. And now they're 100% probably at the age of 10 starting to play softball or pick a sport, you know, so it's pretty tough for them. I think maybe that's why I push the standard at times, because I just know how my relationships with my teammates from way back then to former players, and it's just really cool when you can be all in. That experience of being all in and giving it everything is it's just so rewarding.
Just to talk a little bit about the coming season, you know, softball.
We do, right around the corner.
We have an obligation here to at least reference the fact that this is what you do. When you look forward, how do you, I guess all any of you can answer this question. Is it one day at a time? Is it one game at a time? Are you do you try to not think too far ahead of yourself? Talk about that. How do you prepare yourself, let's say, going forward? The training is what it is, and the camaraderie, the family is clear. But then there's that business of, wow, what if here are our biggest opponents this year? And are you already thinking about that? Or are you like, no, we're going to stay week to week, game to game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll let these two talk because you're going to get two different perspectives from them. But it's easy to get in dream mode.
Yeah.
It's easy to see yourself jumping around at Oklahoma City and, and wanting to be there. It's easy to do that. And then, like, what matters right now is tomorrow morning. So that's where teammate ability comes in.
One shovel full of sand at a time.
One shovel full of sand.
Remember that, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
As a team, we've definitely talked about it, how we're not going to let it affect us as, like, looking all the way past our calendar to the last game. During the program this past weekend, it was mentioned, like, 1%, like, what 1% more, like, one rep can you do? And I think a lot of us took away with that of, like, that one more rep that we do will take us there to wherever we go and we excel to. So I think definitely just installing that, like, whether it's one more rep, like, push-up, pull-up,
right,
weight room.
Pushing whether, yourself.
Yeah, it just will all come together.
Translates into, yeah. So that is incremental. That's one brick at a time kind of attitude. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that we definitely take it one day at a time. The training can get hard. It can get a lot. School, softball, training. This, all of it can get a lot, and that when we break it down and just try and focus on just getting a little bit better each day, then we, it's like more manageable to focus on. And I think that our season is really, really long and has a lot of games, and it goes by in a blink. It's so fast.
Goes
it feels
by
like
quickly.
It feels like you wake up and it's done. I mean, I'm in my sixth year of college, and I feel like I was in high school yesterday. And I know that if I look too far and ahead in the season, I won't be able to enjoy this last year.
I have
year.
Heard That's it said really to point. Senior players saying to the junior players, take care of your body because you are going to need this when you get into those late, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, take care of it.
Lonnie, what do you think? You got a shot?
Yeah, I'm just listening to him, and I thank you for allowing players to be a part of this because it's really fulfilling for me. I think a lot of times as a coach, you go out there and you write up the plans and you do everything and you just, you know, you hope it's right. But getting feedback and hearing them talk like they're in a good spot, they're
very cool.
It's their season, you know. So we just try to give the guidelines, you know, and maybe kick in the booty or hug whenever you need to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I'm really excited for these two. And, you know, it's Allie's senior year, so it's like everything she wants and dreams of you want for her, but she's also giving to McKenna right now too. And so I think that's really fun to see that, you know, the torch being
camaraderie
pretty cool.
Sportsmanship and leadership, all those good things.
Life.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, life
fun.
Itself, right?
Yeah.
So I want to hire you.
Yeah.
Come on. Thank you.
No, thank you. We really
time.
Enjoy it. I appreciate it.
I know that our listeners appreciate you, and yes, Tallahassee will be standing at the sidelines going, yeah.
Yes.
FSU softball.
Yeah.
Folks, that's why we do this for you every week, because it is such a pleasure to bring people to you like Coach Alameda and this lovely Allie Dubois and McKenna Reed. Thank you, ladies, for
thank
your
you.
Participation in
thank
today's
you.
Another training exercise for you. So there you have it, my friend. A conversation we had with Coacha and McKenna Reed, Allie Dubois, a couple of these star pitchers back in January, as they proceed now through the National World Series finals. It's going to be quite a show. Folks, stay with me. We've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. On this wonderful occasion when we have had opportunity to hear from our good friend, Coach Lonnie Alameda, known as Coacha to her team. Delightful human being she is. We've had our opportunities with her over the number of years. Again, ACC Coach of the Year, softball, and right in there with some of the other players, Catherine Sandercock. Wow. Yeah, they're impressive. And here they are going through this World Series finals. So all the best to Florida State softball and all the Seminole fans that are cheering them on. Yeah, man. So there we go. And a couple of announcements for you. Let's see here. Yes, a reminder that City of Tallahassee, the Tallahassee Police Department, offering their Defy program again this year for local youth. It's a summer camp, and this will be the 20th annual Defy summer camp program, described as a leadership camp. It's basically, it's a free prevention program for kids 9 through 12 who live in Leon County, and it aims to assist youth by giving them the tools they need to resist drugs and develop positive social skills. DEFY, right? Defy. With that, the topics will include drug education, resistance skills, self-esteem, physical fitness, team building, goal setting, and a whole lot more. You have to apply for this. Now, the Defy camp takes place in July, the 17th to the 21st. And it's basically a day camp program, 7:30 in the morning till 5:30 each day. And it's out there on Wanish Way at the Florida A&M ROTC facility. Okay, so it's in town, basically, then. And what you want to do is go online, talgov.com/defy, D-E-F-Y. Drug education for youth. So that's the acronym, DEFY. Talgov.com, Defy. That's where you go online to get your form to fill out. If you want to call them, that's going to be local area 363-3658. How about that? So thank you, Tallahassee and the Tallahassee Police Department, doing your part and trying to help kids live better lives. What's wrong with that idea? Yeah, man. Speaking of better times and great things, and this on this weekend, man, it's packed with all kinds of stuff going on. Don't forget Depot Day out there in Lloyd. That's going to be fun, right? And you got that Havana Reggae Festival going on. Music, food, and such. That's over on the at the Farm Center, Salem Road there in Quincy. So check those things out. You know, you could just be out there all day having fun at these different events. And in addition, here we have the celebration of Emancipation Day on this Saturday with church bells ringing this morning at 9 o'clock in remembrance of. They ring for 2 minutes to celebrate Florida's Emancipation Day. 10 o'clock, John G. Riley Center, Museum of Civil War Commemorative Service at the Old City Cemetery. And that's there at Park Avenue. Local school kids and the public will decorate the graves of Black Civil War soldiers. Then at 11:30, dramatic reading of the Emancipation Proclamation on the steps of the Knott House. Now, it may have escaped you, perhaps, that this Florida observance of Emancipation Day actually occurred 2 years after President Lincoln had signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Well, because at that point, you know, the war was still raging. But when it was clear that, you know, the Union had prevailed, the nation had been saved, then Florida recognized Emancipation Day then May 20th, 1865. With that in mind, if you want to participate in these activities, bear in mind that we call it a celebration. It's, to me, it's more of a memorial observance. Maybe a a welcome reminder to all of us that in pursuit of freedom, we are not enjoying the benefits of liberty, freedom, unless we are all participating in that. And so here we have the opportunity to say, if not all of us are free, then none of us are free, by extension. And with that, we can say our liberty, our freedom, then grants us this God-given right and constitutionally protected opportunity to do the right thing for one another. I mean, to me, if you're not doing what is in the best interests of others, then your freedom is really sort of pointless. In fact, at that point, it's just larceny, you know, or it's chaos, right? When you find yourself living your life in a way that is other-centered, directed towards giving to others, caring for those in your own household, that's really the pinnacle. That is the one way in which freedom is most exonerated, I suppose, or exalted is a better word. Freedom is best declared when we are using our liberties, our freedoms, our opportunities to do the right thing for one another. Now, I will remind you, as we close out here in the month of May, our Tallahassee Food Challenge is a demonstration of that same sort of spirit. And acknowledges the fact that in Florida, Leon County remains among the top five for food insecurity. And that when you look across the Big Bend area, that's, let's say, 10, 11 counties, you got close to 100,000 children that are under 18 years old, and roughly 14,000 of them are known to be food insecure. What does that mean? Well, insecurity is simply defined as a lack of consistent access to enough food for a person or for every person in a household. And I mean, that can be temporary, but for a lot of these families, a lot of kids, it's persistent. And unfortunately, hunger doesn't take a vacation. And yet when school is out and those school-based food assistance programs are not available, now the demand for food charities to make up the difference is up, and we get busy, you know, with vacation times and beach trips or wherever we're going and or whatever we're doing. It just doesn't seem that important. Or we're, poor choice of words, it's important, but it's not top of the mind, okay, to be fair. Because I know you agree that, yeah, this is an opportunity for us to do the right thing. Well, we try to make that a little bit easier with our website, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com. You've got plenty of information there, including suggestions if you want to contribute clothing or food items. If you need information that you can relay to others, it's all right there. And there's a convenient button that you can click, and it'll take you to the donation page for Big Bend, Second Harvest of the Big Bend. They are a watershed for so many other food charities, and it's our pleasure to be able to bring it all to you. The Tallahassee Food Challenge for 2023.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Commissioner David O'Keefe was elected to Leon County Commission, District 5, in 2022. So, you know, in commissioner years, that's about a lifetime ago. Because, unless you may already know this, but let me just tell you in case you don't. If you're a city or county commissioner, life moves at an accelerated pace. Largely because had a perfectly normal life, and they were like doing fun things and hanging out on the weekends with their friends and family. And then they get like infected with some kind of desire to try to help the rest of us poor slobs do a little bit better for ourselves, do a little bit better for one another. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways that a person can do that in life, but it so happens that Commissioner O'Keefe has chosen this path. And while he is not a newbie here, we welcome him back as our guest. Commissioner, if I may say, nice to see you.
It's good again. To be seen. It's good to be seen. And I'll say, it may just be that I'm still on a newcomer's pink cloud, but I'm having a blast.
See, okay. Well, then I feel a little better. No more sympathies for you.
Nope, not yet.
But we'll keep the iodine and the Band-Aids handy, mm-hmm. just in case. I'm probably over dramatizing the whole point there. I'm sure I am, but it does happen that I think people who find themselves in a position of responsibility, who then decide that responsibility includes sometimes challenging the status quo,
yep,
or at the very least asking why. Not just what are we doing, but why we're doing it. Now, this has happened of late, and I would say in the last couple of years, right, with regard to the allocation of funding, the approval of projects, and as soon as we talk about projects, we have to talk about Blueprint.
Absolutely.
So tell us about Blueprint. For those of us who are still trying to get our heads around this, tell us about what Blueprint is and what it does.
Blueprint is the fancy marketing name for an initiative that voters approved to have a additional penny on our sales tax locally. And all that money goes into a pool over a 20-year period to fund a number of projects. There are, at this moment, there are 32 key projects. This is the second round of Blueprint. So there was Blueprint 2000 that built things from 2000 to 2020, and voters approved again for us to do Blueprint 2020 from 2020 to 2040. And we have this money coming in, and we have these projects that we are using it for infrastructure, for roadways, for community resources and buildings. And then a small portion goes to economic development and a couple other things. And who overlooks this is a joint commission of city and county commissioners, and we have weighted votes so that they're equal. So the city together has as equal vote as the county together.
Right.
And we have a lot of money going in there, and we have a lot of projects. We have projects as small as $500,000 to projects as large as $129 million. That's a big picture on Blueprint.
That's quite a spread.
Yes.
The metaphor would be the Mississippi River flowing, or maybe more like the Apalachicola, flowing through several states, and each state having claim. And, you know, I come along with my shovel and decide, I'm just going to dig a little trench here and siphon off some of that for myself. It seems to me that that happens without us really recognizing it, I suppose. Now, you would. Those of you who are in the business of being charged with knowing where that every penny is going, the rest of us out here doing our jobs, we hear about a project and think, oh, okay, well, that sounds good. And it happens that when the projects at hand find themselves in a sort of conflict, I suppose, or at least in contrast to one another, of late we've had this discussion about, do we build a park or do we build more roads to serve essentially, effectively, the northeast side of the county, certainly north to northeast side of the county. Tell us about, we're going to get to it in a minute because you had this recent meeting, but tell us about the lay of the land there. What are we talking about?
We're talking about some large roadway projects that do serve, they are, the ones that get talked about the most tend to be the northeast, north and northeast roadway projects. That's the northeast gateway where we're building Wilani, a road over I-10 from Miccosukee Road up north to Killarn, and then a Bannerman Road extension. And then further into town, but still in northern area, we're doing work for North Monroe. We're calling that the North Monroe Gateway. Mm-hmm. But we are doing stuff on the south side. There's differing opinions on whether this next project actually helps the south side or just creates a nice highway to get people from the airport beyond the south side quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's the airport gateway. And then we also have Tharp Street Corridor, which improves roads and mostly pedestrian safety, which is desperately needed. And we have Capital Circle Southwest expansion and improvements and beautification. So we do have projects all over the county. The dollars don't necessarily spread evenly. Mm-hmm. And the projects that you may see, you may not think of. And ideally, citizens shouldn't have to spend all their time tracking all the pennies. You elect people that you trust, that you rely on, and overall you let them know what matters to you, and hopefully they carry out an objective and decision-making process and watch those dollars that they make sure they go to public good. It comes into whose opinion of what is best. Mm-hmm. And there's a bigger picture to this. We talk about roadways, and those are the most significant costing projects. I'll talk about Wilani. There are more. Wilani's not the only one, but we're building this big roadway across I-10 to make it traversable for all the new development that's been approved out there. Mm-hmm. Other areas charge what are called impact fees or developer fees, and they're fees that when developers make big residential projects, those fees pay for the necessary infrastructure that benefits those projects, roads, sewers, electric lines, things like that. Long ago, we decided we weren't going to charge those impact fees, so that money's got to come from somewhere. And mm-hmm. for us, those blueprint dollars go to those gateway projects that help one big part of that. And so, in a way, the people paying sales tax subsidize what I believe should partially be paid for by the builders of those big neighborhoods.
In fact, those big neighborhoods happen to be positioned on land, right, that is generational, if I'm not mistaken. In other words, if you look at the long history, generations of history for that part of the county, it's not the general population. These are a few families that have history. Is that fair?
Yeah, these developers and the city or the county or blueprint, when they're picking up right away, they're not going out and buying an acre from this family and an acre from this person, an acre from this person. They're getting or buying huge pieces of huge family-owned land out there, absolutely.
So in that capacity then, these roads make it, let's say, more attractive for these developers and for those developments that occur, the housing developments and such, commercial use of that land. And now we're talking about everybody else helping to fund what will end up being a benefit to everybody else in that particular part of the county.
Certainly. If I want to be very fair, having those roadways will theoretically keep those cars and that traffic off of other crowded roadways, but that's kind of a second or third level of benefit. The main benefit is out there.
So, trying to be objective here in our comments, I think at the same time, there's another project or several other projects at hand we need to talk about.
Absolutely.
We've got Commissioner David O'Keefe with us. You stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merrymaids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. Well, that's why we rely on Merrymaids right here at our studios, because, you know, I do need a little shine from time to time. And my friends at Merrymaids can make it happen with guaranteed satisfaction, screened and trained employees, bonded and insured performance, even a free consultation. Merrymaids can customize cleanings to fit most budgets and fit your busy schedule with cleanings on a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, or an on-call basis. Merrymaids will deep clean your home on that first visit, something that you've probably been wanting to do, but you don't have to. Call Merrymaids. Relax, and it's clean. Right here in Tallahassee, call 386-2205 or find them online at merrymaids.com. That's 386-2205.
We're back. We're talking with Commissioner O'Keefe. Generally speaking, and you know this too about my half-baked sociological analysis, I find myself oftentimes relying on a perspective in trying to understand why people do what they do. And that perspective is informed with what I call plantation mentality, which we inherited. We are infused with this notion that I'm in charge, you're not. I'm the owner, you're the owned. That's just the way it was meant to be. And because that's the case, when I get questioned about my right to do what I want to do, I sort of find that offensive. You know, why would you question? Of course I have the best interests of everybody, including my friend David here. You put that out there here a few days ago.
Yes.
In the form of a video. Tell us about that.
The video was normally, since I've been elected, I started putting out 60-second weekly updates talking about what's going on. And we had this blueprint meeting Thursday, and Sunday I put out this roughly 10-minute YouTube conversation from my recliner at the house, because I was seeing people talk about the chaos of that blueprint meeting who watched it. You know, the average citizen didn't necessarily, but the local folks who watch local government and a lot of their friends and family, you know, take their advice and stuff like that. And it bothered me that we might just have the takeaway that, oh, well, the entire Blueprint Commission doesn't know what they're doing and it's all crazy. And so I wanted to talk about my perspective.
That having to do with what was the characteristics of this meeting, things just kind of coming off the rails? Or
things went right off the rails. We decided at the beginning of the meeting that there were rails and we weren't going to ride them. We had a two-hour budget workshop where instead of taking each recommendation from staff and saying yes, no, change it so they could move forward with the budget, we decided we're not going to do anything. We're going to spend 2 hours deciding that we'll have another budget workshop where we'll actually make decisions a month from now.
Okay, when you say we, you're talking about the entire body. So we have county and city commissioners.
Correct.
Who simply voted to go a certain way or just took hold of the narrative and said, no, this is what we're going to talk about. How does that work?
How it works is you have a chair of the meeting and, you know, it's not with 12 people, you don't, you make an argument, you make a point, and then if someone else says something, you got to get in line. So five people might have spoken and made different motions or something like that before you get to refute or add or suggest something. And it started with myself and another commissioner, a few other commissioners saying, instead of just looking at this one big thing, we have A through J, let's take them one by one. And then one commissioner brought up the Northeast Park before we started going through one by one. And then another commissioner expanded on a Northeast Park and whether we should or shouldn't move forward, or whether the city should do it because they supposedly built a different park cheaper. And that became the entire conversation. Uh-huh. And a few of us, myself included, when we got in line, tried to say, hey, can we not defer? We've got 40 minutes left. Can we take what we can take one by one, and maybe we can agree on four or five of these, knock them out so staff can move forward, and now we're only deferring the next five. Uh-huh. But that didn't, the conversation didn't move that way. And so we took a vote, and the vote was, we will ask for a little more information, but we'll have this workshop in June.
So they kicked the can down the road and said, we're not going to move on any of this stuff. So you talk about staff. That's the blueprint staff, right?
Blueprint staff, yes.
And so they're waiting on you to say, these are the initiatives or these are the measures or the projects that we need you to address.
Correct. There are 32 key projects. There are more programs, and it's very complicated. And these budget staff people updated all the costs, which are totally different because of cost increases and some projects designs changed. Yeah. And they said, we've summed it up in a reasonable way, and here's what we suggest. Does this line up with what you want? And we normally give them direction, and then they go back and they incorporate it and come back with another version midsummer.
Right.
And then we say, oh yes, that made sense. And then we final approve it in September. They didn't get anything from us. So now there's another month that goes by, and this is not a little amount of work. I know what it takes to build a budget, and this is not a little amount of work. And I worry a little that if we come back and keep asking them for more information, we're going to get worse. Like, you can only give your board oversight. You want to give your board the right amount of information so they understand, but you don't want to have to go through every penny of every project. Now, if a board really wants to, but if we want to do that, we've got to schedule a week's worth of workshops.
Indeed.
And so,
in order to drill down on some of those details.
Yeah. And that's not what we're willing to do. Some commissioners said, we said 2 hours, we got to finish. I got something with my family this afternoon. And other commissioners, myself included, said, this is our job. We got to work through it. Huh. And
you got voted down, basically.
We got voted down. I wasn't the only one. Yeah.
And I mean, the collective.
Collectively, the idea was voted down.
Interesting.
Yes.
With that in mind, we talked about this a little bit. You've touched on it again. This Northeast Park.
Yes.
Commissioner Welch has been an advocate there because it's going to see he's District
4,
and this immediately impacts the residents in that district, among others. He has said publicly, "Wait a minute, the mayor has gone out of his way to try to block this or shoot it down or whatever." Why? What's wrong with having a ballpark for kids to play on? I don't get it.
That's a very good question. And I want to come back to something you said earlier. Why? Trying to figure out why people do things.
Yeah.
And everybody does things for different reasons. What I'll say is this. This project is one, it's the first time I've ever heard of it where the city, the mayor, and Commissioner Williams-Cox, out of nowhere in this meeting, there's no materials, no reports, nothing was in the agenda, just verbally bring up, hey, this park, we built a similar one in Southwood. We built it ourselves. We used our own staff. We didn't out-contract it. Huh. And it only cost us $4 million. Why don't we look at how we can do that for this park? And that's all well and good, but I'm asking myself, why this park? Mm. We have so many other parks we've built as part of Blueprint. We have roads, we have greenways, we have what are called placemaking projects that are kind of like parks and sidewalks. If the city can do all these so much cheaper, why is this the only project all of a sudden the city is offering to say, hey, we know how to do this cheaper? And they're only offering this one. And there are over $100 million of cost increases broadly across all the projects. Mm-hmm. But this one, $6 million, which is not nothing, but comparatively, why this one? Hmm. And it's a question that I'd want answered before I vote to sort of hand over control of what is designed as a county park. The county bought the property. Hmm. And this park has been on the minds of that area for over 14 years. Commissioner Brian DeLoge was trying to get this park built. And we have finally had all these community meetings and gotten what the community wants and put it all together nicely. And as Commissioner Welch said, it will be the first ballpark out there, which is surprising because we talk about fairness, where projects on the south side, like the fairgrounds, seem to never get started. But on the north side, we've got a Northeast Park coming. We have Market District, Placemaking Park. We have some of the nicest, newest roads and infrastructure out there. And so, however, this isn't what I've learned in this commission meeting and this looking through materials for this, my first budget update as a commissioner for Blueprint is, it's not just where the money goes, it's when. And so it's not that, you know, we shouldn't do a park where it's needed and would be beneficial in the Northeast, but it may be that we do it and the money we have today is what we do for the fairgrounds, and the money we have tomorrow is what we do, tomorrow being next year or 5 years from now, for the Northeast Park. But I don't think throwing this weird new wrench of outsourcing to the city based on a verbal offer of what a park may or may not have cost is prudent.
Yeah.
And I've rambled on for a long time, but there's a lot of history of operational effectiveness in the back of my mind that says the more you delay, swap, and change things, the later it will get done.
Talking with Commissioner David O'Keefe, you are in touch with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Jeremy Matlow, co-owner of Gain Street Pies in Tallahassee.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
Gain Street Pies is honored to be sponsoring this year's Tallahassee Food Challenge. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of year when food supplies run low. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families in our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
We're back. We're talking with Commissioner David O'Keefe, District 5 here in Leon County. With concern, I think it's fair to say, Commissioner, that
absolutely.
This most recent meeting of the Blueprint Council, is that how it's referred to? I don't know.
Depends on if you like it or don't like it. That's what depends on what you call it.
Oh, man, no want for snarky humor on our side, right? We're ready to bring it. It happens that you have 12 people, city, county commissioners, in this meeting, and what you described at the beginning of our conversation here had to do with the sort of confusion and maybe a little chaos and certainly a lot of unsettled matters. It was just sort of passed, pushed aside for the next opportunity, which comes in June, when you're saying, well, guys, we could have given our staff folks a lot more detail so they know better what to do. We're just wasting time here or losing opportunity, huh?
We're losing opportunity, we're wasting time, and we're giving up our opportunity to craft strategy. And what I mean by that is we have 32 projects. A lot of money, and we could have talked about any of them and move forward. And there were other projects I wanted to talk about to suggest a change or something like that. There are policies in here that I wanted to suggest we try moving something a little this way to help local businesses instead of international companies. And there were new ideas or directions of how we wanted money to be allocated for a specific purpose. We didn't get to do any of that because we just, as a group, maybe driven by a small group, but that was able to get the narrative going, which I guess makes it a majority of the group, only want to talk about one project and completely gave up the opportunity. And here's the thing with budgets.
And let me interrupt you. And that one project being?
The Northeast Park.
Okay.
If a board doesn't give the direction we want to a budget staff, and we keep just kicking it off until it's the end of the year to prove it, the budget staff essentially decide your budget because you never told them what you want. Hmm. And we're giving up our, unless we dig in June and give some real directives on a number of issues beyond the Northeast Park, the budget staff, who I have respect for, but the budget staff will decide our priorities because we haven't taken the time to set all of our priorities.
And you you positioned us earlier in our conversation by saying, why? Why is this happening? And what's your answer?
I think two things. I think specific to this meeting, for some reason, this project just sticks in someone's craw. I don't know if that's the right phrase or not, but it sticks in a few people's hat. They said, wait a minute, I'm not comfortable with this for whatever reasons they offer. The Northeast Park. And I'm going to dig in on this. Huh. You'd have to ask them why. We'd all just be guessing. On a more broad scale, I think we've elected new commissioners with different perspectives. And I don't mean 3 versus 2, 2 versus 3, A versus B. I mean just different perspectives. And before, I think you had very similar perspectives of most of the commissioners.
People kind of moving in lockstep.
So you just move in lockstep, you move along. Yeah. Now you have differing opinions, and so you have to speak them out, and it gets messier. And so we ought to maybe schedule our meetings a little longer.
Right.
Because I do think, for the most part, we listen to each other and change our opinions based on new arguments and information. But it's going to be a little messier because we have new voices at the table.
Yeah.
And it was extra messy this time.
Well, it happens, too, that I think for us as a community, that table has been expanded.
And for the better.
For the better. I think people are starting to believe, and I mean people, that there's somebody at the table on my behalf, and I don't particularly, I don't live in this part of the county or that part of the county, and I have interests, I have needs for my kids and my business, my family, my friends, and I'm starting to think maybe that person sitting at the table on my behalf better represents those interests. But in order to do that, then, if you're one of them peoples, you have to be heard. You have to be as vocal as you can be and still be, I guess, in order, respectful,
yes,
and all that kind of stuff. There is process here.
There's important process. And when you're too vocal and you don't give up a fight you're losing, you get into chaos. And I think that's what we saw. And so, for example, if I'm fighting for something, a few months ago on the county commission, I was fighting to keep our budget not increased on something. It's not important. But I made my argument. I responded to counterarguments. But after a little bit, I realized I wasn't going to win it. And so I drop it and I let the commission move on because I don't want to bring everything to a halt. But if I keep fighting until the end to just filibuster, we don't get to do anything else. And then other people will do that back to me.
Right.
And I think that's what we saw here is folks who either weren't winning or weren't losing or just, you know, we could have...
A stalemate
and just wanting to keep the conversation on it until maybe something fell their way, which is not an orderly way to do things. If it's something important enough to you, if this was a once-in-a-year thing, you know...
Yeah.
Good. Well, actually, this is a once-in-a-year thing, but that there's a balance between...
Right.
Speaking up, fighting, and letting the process go if you're not winning over the votes.
Yeah. From a sociocultural perspective, it seems to me that we are at a kind of crossroads. You know, some of our colleagues, I think of Tom Flanagan and I, who entertain one another with our back and forth about Tallahassee being this teenager who is finally beginning to realize who she is, all kinds of that sort of stuff. But in my 43 years of being in Tallahassee, having grown up in a large metro area in Seattle, coming here, it wasn't just culture shock. It was a realization that the people I was in touch with, talking with, doing business with, were part of 9, 10, sometimes a dozen generations that were still carrying the torch, still had the, you know, the logo on the shirt, and still had that mindset that says, this is our land.
Absolutely. When I was campaigning and I would talk to someone on the phone, there was a number of people who loved what I was saying. And they say, well, were you born in Tallahassee? And I said, no, I've been here 20 years. They said, oh, well, can't vote for you. Literally, if I wasn't born here, if I didn't have family here, couldn't vote for you. And I think what that misses is, and sometimes we hear that in neighborhoods fighting against a new zoning change or something. Yeah. There are many good reasons for that. But sometimes we hear, I've been here 50 years. And I always want to remind somebody, you have the same property rights as someone who lived here for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't mean our community just changes all of a sudden, but you don't have to be here 40 years to have a say in what we're doing.
I remember talking with people in those days, and I'm talking about early 80s, maybe through the mid to late 80s, and getting to know my way around, and talking with some of these folks who were generational, and some of them who owned large tracts of land. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of acres. And this one woman who was basically the matriarch of this dynasty said, they'll have to take this land from me over my dead body.
And that's probably when it'll happen, when the estate sale happens.
Yeah.
I will say, if people can't see, well, I don't know if people can see and see, if I were from a white family that had generational land in Tallahassee for that long, I don't know if I'd be so open about it, considering what probably happened on that land so many generations ago.
Indeed. Well, my friend, as always, it's not enough time. So with your kindness, we'll invite you to get back in here as soon as you can and bring us further information. This is a conversation that we need to continue. Folks, if you haven't seen the video that Commissioner O'Keefe put out, it is available on our website, TallahasseeTalks.com. We did that especially for this opportunity. It's as well on the Facebook page for the show, Tallahassee Talks, there on Facebook. Commissioner, a pleasure as always. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Hang in there. I have no doubt you will. Commissioner David O'Keefe, folks, that's what we do here, bringing you the conversations that are all about Tallahassee. We're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnifica, Tallahassee's radio to the world, bringing you the sound of Tallahassee at moosemagnifica.com. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whittenglass.com.